Dave the Builder on KFM with Premier Timber Frame Homes, your expert guide to self-built homes. PremierTimberFrameHomes.ie.
Well, I can't say, Dave, that you never brought me anything, because you've come in with a lovely present here now, and I actually thought it was a stick of rock when you gave it to me first, but it's a carpenter's pencil, you tell me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can't pair it. You have to pair it with a good sharp knife anyway. That'll get you started anyway. And you should have it for a while, I suppose.
You should have it for a while, yeah. So a regular pencil pairer won't work on that because of whatever shape it is. So I have to get a Stanley knife now and pair it with a knife.
Absolutely.
All right. So if I want to consider a career then in carpentry, I might take you up on that offer. Yeah. Thanks for that anyway. I appreciate it.
No bother.
Come here. We've a lot to get through this morning. Lots of questions coming in. I know you had it up on your social media as well, and people were getting in touch with you. So what we'll do is just jump straight into it. And again, if anybody has any questions for Dave this morning, get in touch on 0833 97 97 97. There's one here that says, Dave, we recently got a letter from Kildare County Council stating that they're coming out for a septic tank inspection. We were quite surprised at this and wondering, is it the norm? What will they be checking for? And if it's not working correctly, can we get fined?
I suppose I have heard of it in the past. You know, people do get inspections, especially if your house has been built before a certain time. And I suppose if your septic tank is in very bad nick, you can get fined. Now, it's not that common that people get fined, unless obviously they're given a warning to get their septic tank sorted out. But look, there's big grants out there at the moment. There was a grant up until the end of 2023 of about 5,000 to get your septic tank upgraded by the government, and that can be up to about 80 or 85% of the total cost. But that grant is after going up. It's after over doubling. It's now 12,000 since the 1st of January. So they're pushing people with old tanks to get them done. You're practically able to get it done. I'm not going to say for free, but like if the tank cost, you know, 6,000 or 7,000, you're getting 85% to that, you know. So they are pushing people to do it. And especially if you had I remember a couple of years back there was a contamination in the water in a certain area, and they checked all the septic tanks within that vicinity, you know, that kind of way. So there is different scenarios and cases where they will come out and check.
Okay, Emma and Jeff have been in touch with us to say, we're building a house in Leash and the architect wants us to build a passive house. First of all, what's a passive house?
So a passive house is a near zero energy efficient house. It uses 90% less heating or energy to keep the house, you know, warm and efficient. So you'd only be using a very, very, very minimum amount of energy to keep the house performing. Basically, you need a ventilation system and stuff like that, and a mechanical ventilation system. There's a lot of things that you need in the house to achieve the passive standard.
Because Emma and Jeff were wondering, what are the costs that might be involved, additional costs, and what do they need to know? Do they need to hire a specific company to build it, or can anyone come along and build a passive house?
Well, look, if they are going down the road of building a passive house, first of all, you're going to need a passive designer, somebody that's designing passive built houses, you know, all across Ireland and the UK or whatever it may be. I don't think there's any law set in stone that you have to use a certain builder or a certain designer, but we definitely would highly recommend to get your passive designer. And then it would make a lot of sense to get someone that's building passive houses all the times, because it's hard enough to build a house without going down building the best house that you can build possibly, you know what I mean? Just off the top of my head, for instance, timber frame is quite often used in passive houses. There's a company around Ireland somewhere, they're just sticking out of my mind at the moment, Viking Builders or Viking Passive Houses. They kind of specialise in that whole area, and they'd be worth giving them a call, you know.
Okay.
And the costs, what? You were saying.
Yeah, the costs, yeah.
Look, it would be a significant amount more. I suppose the cost of building a regular house at the moment is about 2,500 euros a square metre. The cost of building A passive house is about 3,500 square metre, or up to 3,500 square metre, you know. So it's probably, you know, 35 to 40% more to build a passive house, but you are going to reap the benefits down along the line.
All right, you were talking about septic tanks there a bit earlier. Lucia in Selbridge says, our water is constantly cutting in and out, so we were considering putting in our own well in the garden. Any tips, and how difficult is that to do?
I suppose it depends on where she is, and she'd have to get a survey done from someone that drills wells, you know. So that'd be the first protocol, would be to get somebody out to survey it. Even if there was a small fee involved, I'd get them out. It depends on where in Selbridge she is. She might be, you know, be able to hit the jackpot and get a well in. Now, there is a whole scenario then after that. Then you have to get, because usually if you're taking water over well, you obviously have to get it tested for E. coli and all the different types of stuff you have to get tested for. Usually the water is very hard, so you could actually have to have an extra garage or an extra room to put in like softeners and that into the water. It's a quite big system, you know. Like a small, you'd actually want a small shed to put in all the stuff to get the water up to a drinkable and usable standard.
And would you need a septic tank then for that as well, or is that separate?
You definitely need a septic tank. Like, she's talking about drilling a well for water, like drinking water.
Yeah.
So the septic tank would be a completely different thing then, yeah.
Completely different. All right. There's another one in as well from Graham in Ardclough. He says that he's tried for the last while to get new tiles in, but the grout keeps cracking in between it. Is there any alternative than using the traditional grout in between tiles?
Yeah, so I wanted, did he just put down new tiles and they're after cracking again?
Yeah, floor tiles.
Okay,
yeah.
So I'd imagine what's after happening there is that's probably put down on a timber floor. Maybe if he wants to text in. Usually if it's down on a concrete floor, they don't crack, especially new tiles, unless they were put down very, very badly.
Yeah, they were put down on a timber floor.
A timber floor.
Yeah.
So what you have to do underneath tiles on a timber floor, first of all, the substructure has to be, you know, a good substructure, which it usually is, to be honest. And then you need to put down, some people use marine ply, some people use a cement board, some people use, there's different ways of doing it, but you need to screw it within I think it's 6 inches, but I'd screw it every 100 mil. So that's every 4 inches. You need to screw it, you know, as much as you possibly can, and that'll stop the floor from moving. But, that would be, unfortunately, if the tiles are already down, I don't really have a solution for them. There could be a flexible grout that you can get. I'd imagine there could be, you know.
So it might be a case of taking the tiles up and starting again from scratch, maybe?
Yeah, look, if it's only a small area, like, I'd probably ring a couple of local tilers and ask them, is there any other solution? It really does depend. If the structure underneath it isn't any good, he might have to sort out the structure underneath it, you know.
All right. Maria in Saggart says, what does the future of building look like in Ireland as our population grows so quickly? Will we need more houses, schools, hospitals, etc.? I think that goes without saying, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Just thinking of other countries, that's kind of a few steps ahead of Ireland, like Norway, Sweden, Japan. Like, Japan at the moment is you know, there's house has been factory built, you know. Japan did factory build anything, you know what I mean? But they're like factory built houses, and you know, they're coming off and even schools and hospitals and stuff like that, they're actually able to build a hospital now, and you don't even have to go to Japan for this. They're doing it all across Ireland and the UK. They're factory building hospitals and schools in modular factories, and they're basically bringing them to site. They're coming off the back of a lorry, they're bolting them together, and like, they're coming off like probably 80% finished. So they have a super steel structure. They meet all the fire regulations, and they also meet all the insulation regulations. It's fast. I'm not going to say it's affordable, because it probably does cost a good few quid to do, but it's definitely convenient, do you know?
You mentioned, I think, before when we were talking about some of the solutions that might be out there for the housing crisis that we find ourselves in, and you said particularly in rural areas it might be worth having like serviced sites and putting, I would imagine, houses like that into it, or building houses, making mini estates nearly.
Absolutely, absolutely. Like, as I say, look, I was looking the other night just on Daft. I says, I'm going to, you know, see how many serviced sites there are for sale around Ireland. There's very few. There's very few. And like, out of the 33,000 houses that's been built in Ireland every year, right, 8,000 of them are for sale to the public. The rest are social and, you know, ones for rent. So you've only 8,000 for sale to the public. Like, even if you were able to supply 8,000 serviced sites, low to medium sprawl, you know, so they're not up on top of each other, like a low to medium sprawl along motorways that has the services, that has the infrastructure there, and as I said, it'd be another 8,000 houses that people could potentially self-build every year, you know. And even on a local level, that's going to mean that local trades, local builders, you know, all that end of things, they're going to get, you know, more work in their local area and everything, you know. So it'll be,
especially in rural areas where we see it's so hard to get planning permission in rural areas, that if you were to give planning permission for serviced sites in certain areas, well, then you're going to get 8 or 10 houses built then on the same planning permission.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you're giving self-builders a different option, because, like, as I say, we're talking to hundreds of self-builders every year, and there is a big problem getting planning permission in the countryside, you know. And even look at, let's look at, I know you're going over to Saudi Arabia at the moment, they're building a city that's going to stretch for, oh God, I don't know how many miles, I'm going to say 100 miles, I can't remember exactly how, but it's going to be a city that's only going to be a few miles wide, and it's going to be going in a straight line. Like, if that's what they are able to do out there, why can't we, you know, even build, I'm not going to say build new villages, but pick villages in Ireland that have great potential for expansion. You know, like the likes of, let's say, Kinnegad and so on. Villages that are on the motorways, and you know, let's build them up. And, you know, that's, it's going to solve a lot of the problem, I think.
It's all common sense when you say it like that, isn't it? But it's hard to deliver. And as Maria has said, by the way, it's one thing building houses, but, you know, you need to catch up with the infrastructure there, hospitals, doctors, surgery, schools, that kind of thing as well. But that can all be worked into it, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, as I say, if you were going to upgrade a whole, let's say, a village, you know, you could put in your big schools, your, you know, your hospital, your Garda station, whatever needs to go into it. You could potentially do what, like, I know this, it kind of sounds like mad saying it out loud, but look what Dubai done. Dubai built the best city in the world in a desert with nothing. Like, there's no reason why we couldn't do that on a miniature scale around Ireland, you know, especially because if you look at, let's say, the UK, and you look at the you know, the urban sprawl and the sprawl from London out, that's happened in the UK. It's going to happen here. It happened in Australia and America. Like, it's just pushing out and pushing out. But if we could just put a little bit of thought into it now, you know, you could have really organised villages, really organised towns, and, you know, go with it.
Indeed. Interesting. Listen, Dave, thanks for coming in to us. And actually, after the break, we're going to be talking to Senator Fiona O'Loughlin in relation to the latest proposal to house refugees at a single house out in Parkwira in Newbridge. So stay tuned for that. But Dave McManus of Premier Timberframe Homes, great to talk to you again.
Dave the Builder on KFM with Premier Timberframe Homes, your expert guide to self-built homes. PremierTimberframeHomes.ie. Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
All right, local Fianna Fáil Senator Fiona O'Loughlin raised the issue of the continued use of the private rental market to house international protection beneficiaries in Newbridge in the Shannon the other day, and she joins me on the line now. Fiona, good to talk to you, and thanks for taking our call. We referenced this and we brought it up on the programme a couple of weeks ago, where in Parkwira there was a proposal to house up to 12 refugees in one house in that estate. What was your reaction when you heard the news that that could be happening?
Well, good morning to you, Owen, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to come on and to talk about this. Well, when I heard this first, my response, to be honest, was concern about the one arm of the state interfering in the private residential market. We all know how hard it is to get a house to buy or to rent at the moment. And that's despite a lot of house building going on around Newbridge and the surrounding areas. But I very genuinely felt, and that was obviously very clear from the residents' response, that, you know, a landlord being able to get a huge amount of money. Now, I'm still trying to clarify the actual figure, but we do know that it's way more than what you or I, if we were going in to rent a house, would be paying. And, like, I think that's really, really wrong, because
okay,
it's
let me just give you the figure
out of the market.
Let
yeah.
me give you the figure that we have heard, and as you have said, you're trying to clarify
that. That's the one
that.
I'm trying to clarify.
Right.
Yes.
So what we've heard, just to say, €76 per person per yes. night, over €6,000 a week, or €27,000 a month, if 12 refugees were to be housed in one house.
Which
and I know you're going to clarify that.
20 times, which would be 20 times. What you or I yeah. would be paying on the going market.
If those figures are correct, that is absolutely ludicrous.
It's ludicrous and it's simply wrong. So I raised this in the Shannon as soon as I became aware of the situation. I then raised it as a commencement notice, which is where three topics are chosen each day and a minister has to come in and respond. Now, Minister O'Gorman did not come in and respond, but his department wrote a response for Minister Sean Fleming. It was very clear in the response that in terms of housing international applicants, that basic it has to be a commercial property, not a residential. So my clear understanding, and I said it, and I think it may be up on my Facebook post at the moment, was that this contract is null and void because of that. So I have written to Kildare County Council to ask them if the house owner, the landlord, has sought commercial planning permission, because this is clearly regarded as a commercial enterprise. And my clear understanding, and I will keep fighting for this, is that if this house does not have commercial planning permission, that contract is null and void. And this is not about the people who would be moving in, because in fairness, the people of Newbridge have shown a strong welcome to those that need it. But this is about the state interfering with the private residential market and squeezing out you, me, our family members, our neighbours, that's simply wrong.
Yeah, because if you or I, and, well, I'd speak for myself, Fiona, for example, if I was a landlord and I was given the opportunity of getting 20 times more than what I would get for housing, you know, just a local family, for example, in Newbridge, you would go where the money is. And that's not the fault of the landlord, it's the fault of the policy that would be in place. You know,
agreed.
It's going to squeeze out
agreed.
Those people that, you know, need houses in the local area.
That's it. And there's a huge concern that other landlords would follow that lead. So I'm absolutely determined to fight this. I just think it would be a huge injustice to those who are trying to seek private residential accommodation for themselves.
We covered a story this morning. It's up on our website, where the government has now launched an initiative to buy up derelict properties to accommodate asylum seekers. A tender by the Department of Integration, seen by KFM, is seeking expressions of interest from property owners, private developers and building contractors who are interested in selling or leasing existing properties or buildings in turnkey condition. Not sure if you've seen this, Fiona, because I know you're quite busy this morning, but just to get a reaction. Now the government launching an initiative to buy up derelict properties to accommodate asylum seekers. Dereliction is not a new problem. Why couldn't the government have bought up derelict properties years ago?
I didn't hear the piece because I'm out in Kildangan, as you mentioned, at an Alzheimer's tea party this morning, a fundraiser for a terrific organisation that started at half seven this morning out here. But just as a quick response to that, you're right, vacancy and dereliction is not a new problem. And to be fair, that's why Croí Cónaithe was brought in terms of private residential, which offers grants to any one of us to buy a vacant property. Once it's vacant for 2 years, there is a grant of 50,000. And if it is facing dereliction, there's a grant of 70,000. I think that it's important. Vacancy and dereliction is a blight on all of our streets and on all of our streets in Kildare, in our villages and in our towns. So it's good to see use of it, but I wouldn't want to see it just particularly for that particular use. I think it should be open for other uses as well. We do understand that there is an issue in terms of finding appropriate accommodation for those seeking shelter. Measures are being put in place in terms of trying to have a quicker turnaround in terms of those that can have leave to stay and those to return back to safe countries, etc. So initiatives have to be put in place, but at least that is not putting people in, let's just say, in conflict in housing estates in terms of squeezing out the market. It's looking at a separate market. So that is better. But most definitely, we need to tackle dereliction and vacancy for a number of different types of enterprises.
We also previously reported there's just one property available for a single person or couple through discretionary HAP rates here in Kildare. No HAP properties were available for parents or couples with one or two children within the standard limits. And we know that the housing list here in Kildare is growing and growing and growing, and that's replicated around the country.
It did go down 11% last year because of the fact that 8,436 houses were built in Kildare last year, and Kildare County Council acquired almost 3,000 houses, just going from memory, for those on the housing list. So the housing list actually went down 11%.
It's still far too long, though. I think down in a thigh, like you could be looking at 8 or 10 years on a housing list.
I do accept it. And then we have a problem on where we have a situation in Rathangan where St. John's Convent is going to be available, 26 units for people on Kildare County Council housing list, age-friendly and disability-friendly. And they will come on for those. But we have people protesting about that happening. So, you know, we all really have to work together to try to support those that need those supports. And we have a situation in Rathangan, as I say, where people are going around scaring people, going up to mothers at the school gates because the convent is beside the school, and saying that it's going to be for undesirables, that it's going to be for addicts, it's going to be for people with mental health problems. And some people then are saying also that it's going to be for refugees. It is going for people who are on the Kildare County Council housing list who need to have, as you say, there is a shortage of particularly one and two beds. And this would try and help alleviate that problem. And unfortunately, there's people going around spreading mistruths. And it's really shocking that people are doing that to create dissent and to sow division in our community.
You're having an information evening tonight in Newbridge Town Hall talking about the pathways to housing grants and other government supports, Fiona.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, within housing and talking to people, and you can appreciate particularly around now when there's a lot of canvassing for the local and European elections, and, you know, understanding that the biggest challenge that we have is housing. But when you start to talk about the different schemes that are there, some people are not aware of them. So we have like the Help to Buy scheme, which is a really good scheme for first-time buyers and for those who come under the Fresh Start principle, where they can get up to €30,000 in terms of tax back from their earnings. We also have the First Home scheme, which is trying to help people bridge that gap with home ownership. And there's a significant amount of money, up to 30% of the price is available, and that's interest-free for the first 5 years and only can go up to a maximum of 2.85% after that 5 years. The Croí Cónaithe grant, which I mentioned. Also, just, you know, the local authority home loan, which is a really important one, and the affordable purchase homes. So I've organised a meeting this evening. Senator Mary Fitzpatrick, my colleague, who is our spokesperson on housing, is coming down to with Shane Murphy from Ashgrove, is coming to talk about the SEAI grants And it's important, you know, so it's not just for people who are looking to get on the housing market. It's also for people who may have an older house and they want to get information about the different grants that are available to make their houses warmer, etc.
Okay.
And I will have also information in relation to the local authority schemes as well. So that's at 8 o'clock in Newbridge Town Hall this evening, and all are welcome. And many of our local councillors will be there also, and we'll be able to answer any questions, give out information, documentation.
Fianna Fáil Senator Fiona O'Loughlin, thanks for joining us this morning, Fiona, and we will continue our coverage of what is proposed for Parkwyra in Newbridge here on the programme, and we'll also continue our coverage on that latest development that the government has now launched an initiative to buy up derelict properties with the view of accommodating asylum seekers there.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Bookmaker Dara Fitzpatrick will be looking ahead to the Punchestown Festival Day 3 in a few moments' time, but I want to go to a new survey that was released yesterday that shows 77% of women experience feelings of loneliness during pregnancy and early motherhood, according to new research by the RCSI Centre for Positive Health and Sciences and the HSE Dublin South Kildare and West Wicklow area. It was released to mark World Maternal Mental Health Day, which was yesterday. And joining me on the line is Niamh Crudden, co-chair for the Perinatal and Infant Health Working Group with the HSE Dublin South Kildare and West Wicklow area, and also Dr. Roisin O'Donovan, senior postdoctoral fellow at the Centre for Positive Health Sciences with the RCSI. You're both welcome to the programme. And Niamh, we'll start off with you. The HSE are raising public awareness of maternal mental health difficulties, which are outlined in this study.
Yeah, hi Owen, thanks so much for having us. So yesterday, the 1st of May, was World Maternal Mental Health Day. So it's an international campaign that's dedicated to talking about mental health problems during and up to 1 year after pregnancy. So the objective always for this year, we've been running campaigns for World Maternal Mental Health Day in the region for the last number of years. We want to raise awareness of maternal mental health difficulties. We want to advocate for women, change attitudes and empower women and families by helping them to access information, care and support that they need to recover. So up to one in five women can experience mental health difficulty in pregnancy or postpartum. So just, you talked about the research there by the Royal College of Surgeons, and I know Roisin will talk about it a little bit more. But just in response to that research, we developed a campaign for World Maternal Mental Health Day, which is called the Let's Connect campaign. So we know that there's a really strong link between mental health and connection. So it was really fitting that this campaign was launched yesterday. So when someone becomes a new mother, I suppose there's a natural contraction of a woman's social circles, and as the focus, her focus becomes her new baby. But we know that social support and connection are so important in keeping mums in our community well. So the Let's Connect campaign is a response to the research, and it's a call to action to combat loneliness. Let's make connections with new mothers in our community. So that's kind of twofold. We're asking the general public to link with new mothers in their community. It might just be a hello in the street, or stop for a chat, or ask them for a cup of tea, whatever it might be. I know that some people might feel when they see a new mother with a baby that they're far too busy to engage with them, but mums can make that decision if they want to connect, and just asking a mother or saying hello to a mother could really make their day. So we're asking the general community to do that. And the second part of our call to action is to mothers themselves. So to encourage mothers to link with other mothers in their communities, to reach out and to ask where their local groups are. So peer support and connections are so important in, and it's so important to recognise that. So we just want to draw attention to that as well. And the last message then in our campaign is that help is available. And we are signposting women to the motherhood programme.ie, which is a new website that we co-designed along with Roisin and mothers out in the community. And I know, again, Roisin will talk about that a little bit more. But just before I hand over to Roisin, I'd also just love to draw attention to our ribbon campaign, which is part of yesterday's campaign. So all across Dublin, South Kildare and West Wicklow, we've been handing out cards that have a lovely message to women on them, just telling them they're doing a great job. But attached to the cards, we've two ribbons. They're orange ribbons. And we're asking women, if they're interested in connecting, to tie a ribbon to the handle of their buggy or to their change bag. And the second ribbon, then, we're asking them to give to another mother, a mother they might meet in a street or through a mother and baby group or whatever it might be. So the orange ribbon signifies a woman's openness to connecting. And yesterday, these ribbons were handed out through maternity hospitals, through community organisations, baby massage groups, yoga groups, through the public HSE public health nursing service, and we've had such amazing feedback. Mothers have really welcomed this idea, so hopefully we'll see lots of ribbons around the community, and if you do see them, do please say hello.
Okay, Niamh Crudden, thanks for joining us. Let's hand over to Dr. Roisin O'Donovan then, as I say, Senior Postdoctoral Fellow at the Centre for Positive Health Sciences with the RCSI. And Roisin, as we mentioned there, 77% of women experience feelings of loneliness during pregnancy and early motherhood, according to your research.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. That was one of the significant findings coming from the research. And I suppose one of the aims of the campaign, as well as the website we have, is to share that finding and really like make people feel less alone in their loneliness, that it is a really common experience for women, and to share that, but also to share on the website evidence-based tools and resources to help people feel less lonely. So we have a section on the website around connecting with the community around you, but also supports around your relationships in your day-to-day life, the relationships that are already there, how you can kind of build them and improve your communication to get the support you need. And then also from the other perspective, we also have tools on that website for people who might have new mothers in their lives. So the partners, families, friends, of people who are going through this massive change in their lives of becoming mothers, and the evidence-based tools that they can use to support them as well. But I suppose the research as well focus more broadly on well-being. So we also have lots of supports there around other areas of well-being, things like sleep, managing stress, managing your worry, and building more positivity in your day-to-day life. And we also have a whole podcast series up there on the website where you can hear stories from women across Ireland about their experiences in all of these different areas. Again, an opportunity to get some kind of tips and tricks from people, mothers who have experience, and also just to normalise these experiences and to help women. A common theme that came out of the research was these really high standards that mothers hold themselves to, and this perfectionist idea they have of what it is to be a mother. And we really just want to share that people need to let go of that kind of pressure on themselves and be more self-compassionate. So we have a lot of tools there on the website and in the podcast as well on being self-compassionate and as you manage the transition and the joys and challenges that motherhood brings.
Well, listen, I think it's great work that you're doing, and there's a lot of messages coming in supporting that, and particularly from a lot of women saying, I wish this was in place back in my day, because they would have experienced that same kind of loneliness and difficulty when they first had children, and supports like that weren't available. So well done to both of you. Niamh Crudden, co-chair for Perinatal and Infant Health Working Group with the HSE Dublin South Kildare and West Wicklow area, and Dr. Roisin O'Donovan, senior senior postdoctoral fellow at the Centre for Positive Health Sciences with the RCSI. And there's a message in as well to say, just in relation to maternal mental health, Susie at the Newbridge Family Resource Centre has recently started a buggy buddies group who meet for a walk and a coffee on a Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock in the Newbridge Family Resource Centre. It's a really lovely little group. I've been doing it since November, and the Family Resource Centre is a great resource for local women to link in with each other. They have a parent and toddler group as well. It's all free, and that comes in from Leah. Thanks for that message, Leah. So again, if you want to see any more of those supports, you can go on to the HSE website, the RCSI website, or get in touch with us here at KFM and we'll pass them on to you. Thanks to Niamh and Roisin. Time for this then, because we're not too far away from day three of the Punchestown Festival kicking off.
KFM's daily live Punchestown update with bookmaker Dara Fitzpatrick.
We're going to be live this afternoon from Punchestown in association with Joe Mallon Motors, and we'll bring you live racing commentaries in association with Ace Casino, 1 Curra Road, Kildare Town. And Dara, racing today gets underway a little bit later than the last couple of days. The first race is at 3:40. How do you see it going?
Yeah, look, at a very good card again, and it's giving time, people more time to get to the races today. 3:40, the first event. The first race is a wide open handicap hurdle, but I'm going to put it down to the JP McManus runners in the race. He has three runners in the race here. He's the two horse Holly, trained by John Joe O'Neill in England and ridden by Peter Smithers, and he has the 15 horse Narrow, trained by Henry de Bromhead and ridden by Mark Walsh, who's having a very good festival, and he's the 19 horse Hands On. I think one of the three of these will be there or thereabouts, and if I was to be forced to pick one, I'd pick the two horse Holly. So I'm putting two horse Holly, and I'm putting up the 15 horse Narrow.
Narrow, as they say out around your area. Yeah. Come here, 4:15 then in Punchestown. It's the Frontline Security Handicap Chase, 17 runners.
Yeah, like 17 runners here, and it all revolves really around one horse, whether he acts or whether he doesn't act. I personally don't like the horse, and at around 6-4, the two horse Blood Destiny is a horse that'll be taken on for a few quid out there today. He'll either win hard on the steel or he won't be mapped. That's my personal opinion. I like two horses in the race here, and I'm going to oppose him with these two horses in the ring today. That's the 7 horse Pat Dorox, trained by Gavin Cromwell. Gavin Cromwell's horses are in a very good vein of form at the moment. And the 8 horse Mighty Tom. This horse has ran well at Cheltenham and ran well previously. So I'm putting two up here against the field. The 7 horse Pat Dorox and the 8 horse Mighty Tom.
Do you think the rain will make any difference today, Dara? The last couple of days it's been relatively good out in Punchestown, but the weather not great this morning.
Yeah, 5 mils of rain overnight. I was just talking to Brendan Sheridan earlier on. 5 mils of rain overnight. The ground is the very same as it was yesterday, and it's supposed to clear in the afternoon, so it'll be a nice fine afternoon out there today.
Alright, the 4:50 is the Mongey Communications Latouche Cup. It's the cross country chase.
Yeah, 15 horses here go at the post, and I actually make it between 1, 2 or 3. So it's Cocoa Beach, Stumptown or Birchdale. Cocoa Beach, I like this horse. It'll definitely start favourite, and it ran in the Banks race there before Christmas at Punchdown in a prep race for this. It went to Cheltenham and didn't act in Cheltenham, but I can't get that run. It absolutely sloshed in that day in Cocoa Beach. It's the slightly favoured in the race, so Cocoa Beach will probably win for me, and the two horse Stumptown is the each way horse in the race. So it's 1, 2 or 3, and I'm tipping up the one horse here, Cocoa Beach.
Then we have the 5:25. You're throwing your hands in the air.
It's a no race here. We move quickly on. Gaelic Warrior will come home on its own. It's priced accordingly around the 1-4. No value in the race. Go and have a cup of tea.
Grand. I think there's only four running.
Four runners, yeah. And we've two races tomorrow, very similar. It's the first time this race and the two races tomorrow, the three races and the cards that have cut up badly.
Right, you're giving that to Gaelic Warrior then. No, yes. Competition at all. Next race then?
Next race then is the highlight of today. It's the Ladbrokes Champion Stairs Hurdle, and we have a lot of horses here with chances. Tihupu, who won the Stairs Hurdle in Cheltenham, comes here. He's only ran twice this year already, and he comes here cherry ripe, but he's very short for me at around 8 to 11. He's too short for me, and I'd be taking this fella on for a few quid. He's trained by Gordon Elliott, and he's owned by Robert Gore, and he's ridden by Jack Kennedy. I just think that he didn't flash in Cheltenham. He just done what he had to do that day in Cheltenham. But I'm going to tip up the one horse here, Asterion Flange. Ran well in the race last year, trained by William Mullins, has a couple of decent runs, and I like horses that return from fences to hurdling, and he's done this. He's won over fences the last time. I also like another horse here who won the Stairs Hurdle, not not this year, last year in Cheltenham, and he won the stairs here as well. Sire de Borley. So I'm putting two up here against the field, against Tihupu. That's the one horse of Steering for Lange, and the seven horse Sire de Borley.
What about Monkfish? Is the Monkfish passes
Monkfish has more problems than me at times. He's been injury prone. He came back and he won in Goran there in January, but he hasn't shown it since. He looks like he's injury prone. I wouldn't be having a few quid on him, but I won't stop you having a few quid on him. On
all right, okay. Well, I know very little about it.
Oh, you know a little bit now. You're only telling little fibs there.
Come here. The sixth race is the 6:35 race. It's the Conway Piling Handicap Hurdle, 27 runners.
Oh, lads, and I don't know where to even start with this. So I went up and down it, and I found a little tweak in the middle. The 11 horse here, Kilbeg King. Has only two runs this year, and he comes here after winning the race last year. So it could be a horse that's ready-made for this race this year. He's trained by Anthony Honeyball, and he's ridden by Sam Twiston Davis. He's English-trained. So they obviously went away feeling very happy last year, and he says, we'll come back and have another go this year. So this is a horse here that has a chance here, and he's around a 10-to-1 shot. So I'm going to give that up as a chance. Another horse I like in the race is the six-horse Captain Cody, trained by Willie Mullins. Changed hands from another trainer to Willie Mullins recently. And I think that's a chance it'll definitely start favoured. But I like Kilbeg King at around 10-to-1 is a bit of value.
Let's fly through these last two then. 7:05, it's the Close Brothers Mayor's Novice Hurdle.
Yeah, Close Brothers Mayor's Hurdle. Look, it's all about the 11 horse here, Spindleberry, whether he acts or whether he doesn't act. I actually like another horse, English trained horse here, trained by Nigel Twiston Davis and ridden by his son, Sam Twiston Davis. Casa Demento around 7-to-1. I don't like tipping up favourites because people don't get value in them. So I'm going to tip this fellow up as each way chance. The last race is a very, very tricky contest. The six horse Port Julianne will definitely start favourite at around 6-to-4. Also the four horse Golden Mountain trained by Sean Moran. Sean Moran had a great day yesterday out there at Punchdown. This horse will be ready for today and trained by Martin Mezzel. And the 10 horse Samurai. So I'm going to put two up here against the favourite. That's the four horse Golden the Mountains and the 10 horse Samurai. And if I could, just before I finish, if I could give a little shout out, I was in getting my car washed in Nace this morning, and Leon and the lads asked me to give me a shout out on the radio because I was putting pressure on them, because I had to come out here to do the interview, and they were delaying the car wash. So thanks to the boys this morning.
Very good. Good stuff. Come here. There was one message in there that just wants to know, what price is Coco Beach?
Around 6-to-4. He'll be very short, but I think he'll win. If he does what he done in December, there'll be no betting.
Okay, those tips again, just to go through them. The first race, number 2, Holly. Number 15, Narrow. And number 19, Hands On. Second race, number 7, Pass Duro. And number 8, Mighty Tom. Third race, number 1, Coco Beach. And number 2, Stumptown. The fourth race, a non-contest Arisane with Gaelic Warrior. The fifth race, number 1, Asterion for Lange. And number 7, Sire Du Burley. I'm going to throw in Monkfish there for the crack and see how he gets on. The sixth race, number 11, Kilbeg King, and number 6, Captain Cody. Seventh race, number 13, Caso Nomento, and the eighth race, number 10, Samir, and number 4, Golden the Mountains. And a reminder, we're live from Punchestown this afternoon with Joe Mallon Motors, Salins Road Nace, and also our commentaries are in association with Ace Casino out on the Curra Road in Kildare Town. Thanks for that, Darren. Back again tomorrow morning.
Thanks, Owen. See you in the morning. Thank you.
KFM's daily live Punchestown update with bookmaker Dara Fitzpatrick.